Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and let me just say, I'm sorry, but we had a little technical difficulty, and we're starting 7 minutes late. I hope you're still there. I hope you think I'm worth waiting for. Maybe take that back, because I don't want to know the answer to that, okay? But anyway, I'm here now, and let's go right to what we're doing. If you read our promotion, you would get an idea that we're talking about something called Freedom School. And the reason we're talking about Freedom School is that over the last few weeks, there's been a lot of discussion about Freedom Schools on Facebook and on War Report and some direct communications to me and to Joe about Freedom Schools. Like, what are Freedom Schools? And some people, they have, I guess they have been influenced by what they've learned so far in the last couple of weeks. And have decided maybe they wanted to start their own Freedom School. And that's why some people were calling me. I don't know why folks, you guys were calling me like I'm the Freedom School guru, but I do know something about Freedom School. And so anyway, decided a couple weeks ago that once we finished with Do You See What I See? Do You Hear What I Hear? That I would try and get a show, possibly two, and on Freedom Schools this week. And depending on how far we get, I'll finish off next week. And then the following week after that, August the 20th, is my birthday, and I'm going to do a show on my birthday. Been on air almost 4 years, and my birthday has never fallen on a Sunday, so that's going to be interesting. Okay, Freedom Schools. Before I get into trying to talk about Freedom Schools as they are today, you have to know that there's a history here that's almost 400 years in the making. And it may not have been called Freedom School, but back in the day, back in the 1600s, the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, it was really a effort for a freedom school. And so people who talk about freedom schools today and those who want to start a freedom school today, I always say the following. You really need to know the historical context of the notion of freedom schools. Going back to what Edmund Burke, and I always quote him, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. Well, freedom schools have a history, and you really need to know that. And my key message is you need to know the curriculum of the freedom school, especially those 40 freedom schools that were started and maintained during the summer of 1964 across the South, but particularly Mississippi. Like any program, it's your curriculum. And that's what made the Freedom School efforts of 1964 with their curriculum. I'm going to get to that a little later, but I want to set it up so that you, especially the teachers and parents, will be listening to what I'm saying and thinking about it within that context. Now, let's do the historical context of Freedom Schools. And if you've been with me for the last 3 years, you know that over those 3 years, I've talked a lot about Black education. And I've mentioned that I had a bucket list. And in my bucket, I have 4 or 5 projects that I want to get done before I kick the bucket. And for those of you who don't know what the hell I'm talking about, an old expression from, I don't know, hundreds of years back or more, and people would say, well, how is Billy Joe over here? And somebody would say, didn't you know? He kicked the bucket. In other words, he died. And the notion of doing things before you die, before you kick the bucket, I guess gave rise to this notion of the bucket list. Well, I have some projects that I want to do in my bucket list before I kick the bucket. And one of those projects, and I've mentioned it several times here, was the 400-year struggle for Black education in America. And over the last 3.5 years, I've did snippets of what that project is all about. And going back to the 1600s, when first Africans were dropped off here in Virginia in August the 20th, matter of fact, 1619, some 30, 40 years later, there was a development of the slave codes. And in those codes was the beginning of segregation, the beginning of racism, and the beginning of slavery as a status, a permanent status that was passed on from mother to child throughout infinity. And in those slave codes, as they would evolve, there was a section on education, the education of the slaves. It was prohibited. Slaves couldn't be caught with any type of education material, books, pen and pencil, or quill back then. And, of course, slaves couldn't manifest their learning. And even the slave owners were prohibited from educating the slaves, and slaves themselves at some point would get together late at night, sneak out into the woods, and they would share material that they probably gotten from the big house, not the prison then, but the master's quarters. And those who worked in the master's quarters who got access to books and what have you, they would come out and they would try and share the rudiments of an education. This was very crucial back then. It showed how important education was to my early ancestors here, and how important it was for the ruling class to keep the slaves from getting an education. In the early 1600s, there were huge debates between slave holders over the notion of educating the slaves. The vast majority did not want the slaves to have any education. some of the slave owners, especially those who had the bigger plantations, felt it was imperative that some of their slaves had some form of education because they wanted them to do more than plant and pick crops, more than chopping trees down, clearing areas for planting. They wanted them to be able to do bookkeeping. They wanted them to be able to deal with shipping manifests and those areas where a knowledge of education was imperative. Those slave owners who didn't want the slave to have education won out to some extent, considerable extent. But each individual slave owner was like a king of his domain. So if he wanted his slaves to, or slave, or a couple of slaves to get an education that would allow them to be able to inventory goods coming in from Europe or from other parts of the state or the colony or other colonies, and being able to keep books, keep records. That was up to that slave owner. Then there was the religious component. The religious establishment wanted the slaves to have some education. They wanted the slaves that they were going to be transformed from hedonist animals to some notion of civilized human being. It would be through Christianity and the indoctrination into Christianity. And they wanted the slaves to be able to read the Bible. And so you have at the very, very early, early days, this notion of slaves and education. Some of them got education. Some got it through their slave owners. Others went out in the woods, as I mentioned, and developed some form of education that they shared and transmitted. I would argue that what I just said was a form of a freedom school, especially for those slaves who would sneak out at night into the woods. They were risking their lives, their limbs, because if they got caught, the punishment was very severe. But they wanted an education. Those slave owners who didn't want the slaves to get an education predicated on the idea that if you educate or allow your slaves to get an education, will they still be a slave? Physically, yeah, but mentally, questionable. I used to use the example here on War Report. It was like people used to say the country boy would come up from the South to New York City, and he would see Broadway and the glitter and the glamour of Broadway. How are you going to keep that country boy back home on the farm once he's seen Broadway? Once a slave has gotten an education, how are you going to keep him as an obedient slave? Those slaves who were able to, they got an education. They worked in the master's home. They were able to pass some of that off to the other slaves out in the woods. And my argument is that those were early forms of freedom school. We go from there, and that period lasted a long time, to the Civil War and after the Civil War. And again, if you've been with me for a while, you've heard bits and pieces of this. After the Civil War, the question arose as to what are we going to do with 4 million slaves who have just been liberated? The federal government created Freedmen's Bureau, And part of the responsibility of the Freedmen's Bureau was to provide some kind of education to the newly emancipated slaves. In the South, we had a phenomenon where the slaves themselves, the freely emancipated slaves, actually built schools. Though people coming from the North, teachers, to teach in the schools that the slaves themselves built. They were so successful at building these schools and starting the rudiments of an education that white parents who did not have access to any type of schooling themselves and for the children would actually send their kids to the schools that the slaves built to be in the classroom with the black former slaves being instructed by black teachers and white teachers in these schools. I would argue again that those schools were, quote, freedom school, evolved from the rudimentary schools that the slaves built themselves during slavery when they would sneak out and share learning experiences. Those who were able to do some reading or writing in their slave quarters late at night. The slave schools, or the schools that were built after slavery, is just an evolution that we're experiencing now, a third or fourth evolution. So you would have that. Also, after the end of the Civil War, that Reconstruction period, and I've talked about this extensively, was that you had one author talks about the white architects of black education. And I've mentioned that's when the Carnegies, the Rockefellers, the Fords, and some of the other millionaires of the era used their philanthropy to create museums, schools, and et cetera. And some was for the slave population because they saw it as we just liberated 4 million slaves. We now have a Negro problem. And one solution to this problem was to provide some form of education. I would call that a third evolution. I'm talking in broad strokes here now because there would be different avenues to educating or providing some type of education to the African Americans of that period in different parts of the country. So I'm painting a very big, broad canvas here. We come out of the 1800s, and then you get into Plessy versus Ferguson, which established separate but equal, which was in reality separate but unequal, which in reality was another form of slavery. So that you have schools being built for white kids. I won't call them schools being built for black kids because they were nowhere near a school as we think of it. And you have the segregated education, and now you have this mandatory requirement that every kid has to go to school up until a certain age, da da da. You get schools now whose real job is to, as I've talked about in the past, start this socialization process of keeping the minority kids as glorified slaves. They didn't call them that, but basically it was an education to keep you in your place and for you to know your place. Now, I'm going to just jump now to 1954, when the Supreme Court declared Blasey versus Ferguson was unconstitutional, separate but equal was unconstitutional, and that there should be this integration, there should be rights and privileges for marginalized groups, and particularly the African-American group. 1954, if you know your history, you know that there was that decision sent shockwaves across the country. The resistance that developed among white Southerners, the former Confederate states, was massive. You had states closing down, quote, public education and setting up the academies. You had black kids not having schools to go to, not having teachers, not having books, because the state no longer provided the funds for those. Well, during that period, there were teachers, black teachers, who still individually and collectively tried to give some form of education in their homes, in their churches, wherever, without pay. Parents sent their kids. Again, if you know your history, you know what I'm talking about. Enter to where we are in 1964. 1964, a group of college-age students, acronym SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. They had been in the South pushing for passage of laws. You know the story, lunch counter sit-ins, and everything that took place in that period of time. Well, SNCC decided that they wanted to go really big, and they came up with this project that they call Freedom Summer. Without Freedom Summer, we wouldn't know anything about Freedom Schools. Freedom Summer was basically a project to go into the southern states, and principally Mississippi, and seek to get black people registered to vote so that they could become first-class citizens. If you know anything about the period, it was just like today, where in the southern states and the Republican states, north, south, east, west, gerrymandering here now, where all the blacks and other minorities are put into a particular voting district so that their votes do not spill over to white districts, where the white candidate, usually a Republican, would have to have any competition because black votes would count in his or her election. Gerrymander, you know what I'm talking about. Well, back then, black folks couldn't vote. And if you saw our promotion and you looked at any of the videos we should provide links to, there was a comment that during that period, which lasted for about 100-some-odd years of black folks not being able to vote, there was a thing called poll tax you have to pay to vote, literacy test. And literacy required you to have an education, some knowledge. But then you have a school system where you don't provide knowledge, or you don't even provide a school system so you can get education, but then you're held responsible for being able to have knowledge and be literate in order to take an exam in order to be able to register to vote. Incredible. So, SNCC's thing was, we want to bring the blacks in Mississippi and other states into first-class citizenship, and we want to do it on a massive basis. So the leadership of SNCC came up with this idea of a project that you could almost dub it Operation Freedom Summer. They wanted to get upwards of 1,000 students, college students, to come into Mississippi and help get the black population prepared to be able to register and successfully get registered. That was the principal goal of this project. And they wanted to get as many white college students as they could. It was part of their strategy. And that strategy was, if it's all black students, they will be killed, they will be beaten, they will be put in jail, lynched, whatever. But if we have white students, young men and women, there may be hesitation to inflict on these white students the type of violence that they routinely inflict on us. So they went out and they recruited from universities in the Midwest and the North, Northeast, and other places to become volunteers to come be trained and to go out and do this massive effort to get black men and women to be able to vote. That was a primary objective. The second objective was, and you don't hear this when you, if you do research on the Freedom Schools, was that having experienced the bombing of the church in Birmingham, Alabama, that led to 4 young girls being killed, they were worried about the safety of the kids because they knew there was going to be some form of, or expected there would be some form of retaliation. And so to protect the kids, the idea was to collect the kids in different locations in large numbers and keep them safe. While you have them, provide them some type of education that was a real education that was different from the poor education, if they got any at all, they were given by the local schools. Let me say that again. And keep the kids safe while you have them. Develop an education program to try and teach them some things while they are under your care. And hence, the name Freedom Schools came about. And what, and I'm rushing because we started late here, but what The key was that they wanted a Freedom School curriculum. And it goes back to something we talked about here on the War Report many, many, many times, and that is either Hitler and Stalin, this quote is attributed to them, he who controls the curriculum controls the future. But they also can rewrite the past. They wanted a curriculum that would relate to the black children in the most positive way. Their central premise was the notion of the importance of questioning and connecting material to the children's lives, their experience, was relevant to them. And that if they were able to do this, then they would create a curriculum that would, and here's the drum roll, be a liberation experience. I'm going to jump ahead just for a moment to say that the Freedom Schools' central aim was to provide a revelation, if you want to use that word, but a transformation. They want to transform the children from how they've been taught to view themselves so negatively, how they've been taught to keep them in a state of slavery, a state of ignorance, and to teach the children to take the place of their adults in this elevated form of slavery. That was, we talked about this before, the purpose of education is a socialization process. Okay. So they wanted to do this, you know, transformational education for the children. They wanted the children to come out of this experience transformed, changed, and they wanted the education experience itself to ignite a passion for learning so that the students would be engaged long after they were gone, they being the Freedom School teachers. That's very brief, very condensed, but now let me go back and add some meat to what I've been saying. If you go from the historical perspective I started with, the history of freedom schools in America, there's always been this drive for Black people to get education, and that this education would be a liberation. I don't know if any of you have ever heard or taken a course or read a book, but there are now in sociology courses on liberation sociology, courses on liberation psychology, theology, liberation using theology, anthropology, political science. The central theme here is liberation, using education as a weapon, as a tool to liberate one's consciousness, to invigorate one's consciousness, to wash ideas, values, self-perceptions of you being unworthy, you being ignorant, having no free will, and transforming you into a person who has agency. And we've talked about that word in the past, an agency for controlling your own life, helping bring about change, and that change was possible. Now, that's a lot. That's a lot to try and achieve in a matter of weeks, and with children as young as 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. This was the goal of the freedom schools. It was liberation, or we say the purpose, teaching freedom, using critical pedagogy. Dewey's, John Dewey's, Education and Democracy. Developing a critical liberation curriculum. Using all of these then to help bring about a transformation in as many young people as they could with the time and resources that they had. So when we talk about what are freedom schools, I think, at least for me, it's hard to boil it down to one thing. I look at the freedom schools in the big picture, in the evolutionary process. You know, it's a school where nothing else exists. By that I mean those periods when blacks didn't have school and it was illegal for blacks to get any kind of education. A freedom school would be an alternative to that. I look at it also as an addition to what does exist. Again, an alternative. If you have a school system or district where the minorities are given not even the rudiments of quality education, then the freedom school is that school that exists in addition to what is being provided. Another way is to just call it an alternative school to that which has existed. Let me say those again, because each time I'm saying something, I'm saying to you that if no education opportunities exist, a freedom school is something that you can create in the absence of any other possibilities. If you have a school system and it's piss poor, freedom school is something, is an addition to that which exists. It's an alternative to that which exists in many cases. And it started back in that slave period as early as the late 1600s. Its purpose has evolved into teaching freedom. And when I say teaching, again, I may be repeating myself here. You're talking about liberating a person's mind, not just the body, but the mind itself, where all of your emotions and your perceptions and how you see yourself, how you see the world, how you see yourself within the world, your hopes, your dreams, if you have any. That's what I'm referring to here when I'm saying teaching freedom, liberation. Not just the physical, but the mental, the emotional part. And I want to take special note here. In our promotion, as I said earlier, we provide you several links. One of the links was to the Freedom Schools curriculum. If you look, or if you have any knowledge of Freedom Schools, I want you to become, if you're not already there, aware of the fact that Freedom Schools curriculum was social science, art, and humanity-based curriculum. This was their notion of progressive education via a progressive curriculum. I'm silent because that to me is drum roll material. A social science curriculum, arts, humanities, the very thing that the neolibs of today have gone after tooth and nail to eliminate, to reduce, the arts, the humanities, the social sciences, or quote, social studies. Why? These are the subject matters that make us human, that help shape our humanity. Not the math, not the biology, not the advanced algebra. In those schools where social studies are still being taught, there's no civics, mostly, there's no civics class. There's no notion of having classes that help prepare the next generation of democratic citizens, citizens who can live in a pluralistic society. That was one of the things that the Freedom Schools latched on to back in the 60s, the importance of the social sciences, the arts, the humanities. Their curriculum was pretty much based upon those areas. Sure, they taught you some math. They taught you something about science, that the world was round, not flat. They taught you some geography. I remember they were teaching black kids then. Their focus was not on Hispanics, Asians, in that period of time. And so they were teaching these kids about Africa and where Africa was. They were teaching about slavery, how we got to where we were in 1964 by going all the way back to the late 1500s, 1600s. So if those of you who are, I started off by saying that there seems to be interest right now in what is a freedom school. Some people want to start a freedom school, and if you're going to do so, and a few people that I've talked to, the first thing I've said to them is, well, two things. One, know the history. Two, the curriculum. It all is going to boil down to the curriculum. And I've always say to you, why? Know the why. Because if you know the why, you can figure out the when, the where, the how. Because all of that will be driven by the why. And the why here is helping to liberate people from oppression through a progressive education that is aimed at liberating people, transforming people, and doing this through a progressive education platform. So, if you're thinking about developing a freedom school, know what the original purpose was. Of course, those purposes were shaped by the larger social cultural framework of the time. Your purpose may be a little different today, but then again, it may be the same motivation that the people had the summer of 64. And there are now tons of freedom schools all across the U.S. Which says to me, and maybe even to you, that the need for freedom school experience is just as alive today as it was back in 64, as it was back in the 1860s, as it was back in the 17th century and back in the 1600s, which says something again about our contemporary curriculum and education. Yeah, I'm talking Common Core. I'm talking the capitalist shaping of education to a marketplace. I'm talking about people who are getting into education for profit and not the altruistic goals of actually educating the next generation to be democratic citizens, educating people to reach and exceed their potential. It was the lack of those things back in 64 that was part and parcel of the motivation of the people to create and label this thing called Freedom Schools. The need for Freedom Schools exists today and probably tomorrow and a whole lot of other tomorrows for a lot of tomorrows to come. So if you are an individual or part of a group that is looking at Freedom Schools because you've just learned about Freedom Schools and it's something that you think that you can do and you want to do, I'd say go for it. But I also say educate yourself, use that word education, educate yourself on the history of it, educate yourself on the why, the purpose, if you're going to do it. And there is one last thing, let me say this. I know we started late, and there was so much more that I want to talk about. That Freedom School movement was populated by whites and blacks. Today, there are many, many whites who running Freedom Schools. There are some people who are saying white folks are appropriating the Freedom School concept and the label and et cetera, and that this should be a black or brown movement today. Remember, if you know your history, there were a lot of white folks that put their lives on the line to come to Mississippi and elsewhere. And remember, it was during this Freedom Summer and the Freedom Schools that the three civil rights young men were killed. It was the killing of those white civil rights workers that galvanized the nation's, oh, I can't even come up with the word in terms of how people felt about what had happened, and to some extent, what the organizer SNCC started out with, the idea that white people would be the shield, maybe, because the other white people would think twice about brutalizing them and killing them, or they wouldn't think at all about doing it to blacks. It was the killing of those three civil rights workers and the two white men that actually propel the civil rights movement to the next higher level of awareness and participation for the remainder of the civil rights movement. And my time is up, and I have so much more that I want to say. I want to talk about some of the Freedom Schools that are out there. The Children's Defense Fund has several Freedom School sites all across the country. They're in California, West Coast, East Coast, North, South, Midwest. And I want to talk about those. So I am going to do a part two next week, at which time I will probably have talked to some people. And, oh, by the way, I was just recently asked to talk to a group of people here in Buffalo about freedom schools, starting a freedom school, some of the things that I've talked about here, and it'll be the night before my birthday, the 19th of August, if I do it. My birthday is the 20th, and the fact that I'm doing the show now and possibly next week, I got a smile on my face because none of this was ever thought about 3 weeks ago. So my time is up, been up for a while. I don't know if I've done a decent job with the time that I had. I hope you got something of value from this Rush presentation. I'll hear from you, and then I'll try and make it up next week. With that, have a good rest of your Sunday, and we'll be back next week, part two of Freedom Schools. Thank you.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.